Oh, well, it's a secret. I can't tell you.
Of course not. All right. So give me some non-secret things that can help.
I'm just kidding. I'm happy to share all of my hiring insights.
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey of self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to Rogue Startups, episode 27. This week, I am flying solo. Craig is buried at work, and I have the pleasure of interviewing a good friend of mine, Brad Tenard, who is the founder of Delicious Brains and WP Migrate DB Pro, the co-host of Apply Filters, and co-founder of Big Snow Tiny Conf. That's quite a resume there, Brad.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Dave.
Well, thank you for being on. And I just like to say that your product has the honor of being the hardest to pronounce, but one of the easiest to use. You should actually use that as a tagline.
What's that? My product name?
Yeah, WP Migrate DB Pro. Just trying to spit that all out in one sentence.
I feel
like I'm doing these verbal gymnastics in my mouth just to try not to trip on it. And of course, you had to correct me before the show because I was mispronouncing it.
Yeah, well, most people, my last name is really hard to pronounce, so I figured we'd just stick with the tradition.
Well, here's the unpronounceable last names.
Yeah. You pronounced it a way a lot of people do. They put the DB before the migrate, and a lot of people do that, so... So you're not alone.
Oh, well, okay. I'm in good company of all the schmucks that can't pronounce your company.
That's right.
Or your product.
Right.
Sorry, your product. Anyway, you and I were chatting a little bit before this, and I would very much like to have you share your story with us today about how you kind of jumped into entrepreneurship and what that journey's been like. Because Delicious Brains, your current incantation of entrepreneurship, is really not your first venture in this, is it?
No, it's not. I've always been kind of entrepreneurial, like even from a really early age. I remember I used to, sell lemonade at the top of my driveway. And I lived on a rural, dirt road with like three cars a day. So that's
optimism.
Yeah, I had that, unbridled optimism that most entrepreneurs had from that young age. And I used to do weird things. Like I used to build like little trails through the woods and get my, anyone that was visiting to come through there and like charge them a nickel or something. just stupid kid stuff, but like with an entrepreneurial kind of flavor to it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, probably like the first time I got... kind of paid for legitimately was, besides mowing lawns and lemonade stands, when I built a website for a local business. That was probably the first time. So I was basically a freelancer in high school.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah.
So what did that migrate into when you got into college?
I met a friend of mine, Pierre Gramaison. We started a web hosting company. He had already been working for a web hosting company and had, built websites and stuff during high school, kind of like me. And so we kind of just hit it off and we decided, he knew lots about web hosting. So I was like, I know lots about software. How about I build a software and you kind of do the sales and, other stuff.
Right. All the nebulous other stuff. I'll develop over here. You do that other stuff.
Yeah. And that's basically how it went. I built... like a control panel from scratch, like cPanel or Plesk. I build our website and all of our sales systems, like the website plus the e-commerce system, and an admin panel for us to manage customers and all that stuff. Built it all custom from scratch. I can't. It's mind boggling that I did that like in my spare time during college. I don't know, but it was pretty interesting. We invested in servers, so instead of doing the smart thing and leasing servers, in retrospect, that's what we should have did. Instead. Whoops. We're in college here, right? So we have no money. So we took out lines of credit. We took out like 10 grand and bought like three servers, like good servers, Dell servers, and had them installed on racks in Montreal.
Nice. Yeah. So 2 years later, you're out of date.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, in retrospect, we that's just an experience. We should have leased the servers or even did, you know, rented server space or something. You know, we could have done it a variety of different ways. But we just felt like we really wanted to own it, you know, like own the business. But anyway, that was a mistake.
Well, sure. I mean, everybody starts out their business and makes some real rookie mistakes there, and that's how you've got good stories to tell later, right?
Yeah, exactly. But anyways, I kind of stepped away from that business. It didn't really interest me that much, and I moved around the country, and I moved, you know, internationally and did some traveling, and my business partner, he took a full-time salary from it and ran the business kind of full-time. And I just kind of remained a shareholder. And a couple of years ago, I sold all my shares in the company and kind of stepped out of it completely. So, yeah, that's that chapter.
Wow. So that lasted a long time.
It did. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. So how did you migrate from that into WordPress development?
Yeah. So I started with WordPress in... back in 2004, so WordPress 1.2, I think it was, just setting up a blog and just kind of tinkering with it, and really had no ambition to, you know, build a business around it for sure or anything like that. And from there, I guess it wasn't until 2008 when I was working at an agency that I built this little plugin called WP Migrate DB, and I just threw it up on WordPress.org because I thought other people might like to use it as well, because I thought it was solving a problem that was pretty painful for me. I figured other people might have that problem. And it kind of sat there for years.
Really? Nobody knew that at first? Or was this just a consequence of the repo when it first started wasn't really being widely used?
I think it's because no one knew me, so they weren't watching what I was releasing on .org, and they didn't know the plugin because I didn't really tell anybody about it.
Okay.
I just put it up there and, you know, hope people would find it gradually. And they did, but it took literally years before you know, enough people started to find it and recognize its value. It wasn't until 2012 that I decided to try to turn it into a business. But before that, I guess let's rewind a little bit. I was freelancing, and then I decided that I wanted to start a new venture. And I reached out to AD Pinar at WooThemes, and he was mentoring wannabe entrepreneurs, I guess, wannabe startup founders.
Nice. Awesome opportunity.
Yeah, I know, right? And I had this idea for this marketplace built into the WordPress dashboard. So iTunes for WordPress, you know?
Right.
And he liked the idea. And so I pursued it and developed a prototype. And then at that point, he brought it to a couple. So he brought it to WooThemes and brought it to another partner. And they invested a little bit so that I could work on it for the rest of the year. So I took a little bit of angel capital, you could say, and worked on it, rode that throughout the year. That was 2012. And just never got the traction on the marketplace. It just couldn't get it going. Couldn't get people to buy. That was the big thing. I got lots of products in the store.
Yes, I seem to recall I actually wanted to put Business Directory plugin, but I think I got in a little bit late and you guys were still in that, we're not really sure who's buying this stuff yet, so give us a little bit phase.
Yeah. When I say no one was buying, I almost mean no one. Like, I think that whole year we sold 12. We had like 12 sales or something. It was abysmal. And the main reason was because, first of all, the plugin, we couldn't get it on WordPress.org. It wasn't permitted on WordPress.org. So you had to actually download the zip from our website and install it in your WordPress dashboard before you could actually browse the products in the store and buy something.
Right.
That kind of defeats the purpose, right?
Yeah, and that's some serious friction to have to introduce into the process to basically say, hey, go over here, download this other completely random thing, put it in your WordPress, and then you can start buying from us.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, and you're also being very blatant about being a middleman there, right? And people generally don't like middlemen at all, right? You have to have a pretty good value proposition as a middleman so that people will embrace you, you know? And our value proposition was mostly convenience.
Right.
And it was not exactly convenient to have to install this zip file, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you're certainly not the first one to try this. I mean, Woo has done this as well in their own setup. They actually had a store within, you know, you install their theme and then there's something in there you can go and add on Woo Dojo and the additional plugins and stuff like that. I mean, I would imagine they're probably having similar struggles, right?
I think it might be a little different. Are they actually charging money through the dashboard or?
Depends. Certain things they are and certain things they're not. Like Woo Dojo is free. So right. Once you've bought the theme, you get that. But I think if you wanted to do like WooCommerce add-ons, specific WooCommerce add-ons, those they charge for and you can buy them through the dashboard now.
Oh, is that right? I'll have to check that out. I haven't seen that.
Now, they may have changed that. I the last time I checked, that's what they were doing, but I haven't looked in a while.
Yeah. You can do that. It's perfectly fine to do that as long as your plugin isn't in .org, right? Because .org still doesn't allow that any kind of marketplace to be in there. So, yeah. So, anyway, we had a bunch of strategies around, you know, we kind of knew from the beginning that we probably weren't going to get into .org. So we had some strategies. So engaging web hosting companies so that when you one-click install WordPress, the plugin would be automatically installed, for example, was one strategy. That didn't pan out. And the other one was to bundle an installer with WooThemes products. So if you install the WooThemes theme, there'd be like a WP App Store menu item that you could click on and it would just be a big install now button and you could install the WP App Store and go from there. So it'd be a lot more convenient than messing around with zip files. And we did actually do that. We did, but we did it in a way that aggravated WooThemes customers.
Ooh.
And they had to pull it out within, you know, just a few weeks of it going in. So that was a non-starter. And I kicked myself for that because the mistake was making it a top level menu item versus tucking it underneath the WooThemes menu. People hated that it was a top menu top level menu item. And it was showing up in their dashboard. They thought it was spam, and people were just freaking out. So they had to yank it right away.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was a tough one to swallow.
I can imagine. Yeah. So I'm guessing that you're not really positive on the whole possibility of a plugin app store at this point.
Not really. Well, the thing is, I think the marketplace that exists right now is very stable because it's just Google, right? It's fairly democratic. You know, no one controls it, right? Well, Google does, right? So it's
that's as democratic as it gets, I guess.
It is, right? It's as democratic as, you know, anyone else competing out there, right? Mm-hmm. For e-commerce.
It's as democratic as Matt Cutts wants it to be.
Yeah, exactly. So I think like a marketplace a dominant marketplace, you know, owned by some company or someone, I think would be, it would make me a little bit nervous now as a WordPress product person, you know? So.
Especially if all your revenue is coming from that one source. I mean, I like you were about to ask me how I felt about this. So
yes.
I can tell you that just having one source of traffic for any of my plugins always makes me nervous.
Right.
And I mean, I wouldn't say that I have highly diversified sources at this point, but at least, you know, most of my stuff is coming from the repo at WordPress.org, and then I've got some organic stuff, and then I've got a little bit of reference from links that I've put up on articles on various people's sites. So at least I feel like there's a portfolio of diversity in there. But if you literally told me I was going to have 100% of my traffic from bobsmarketplace.org, I might be a little bit nervous about that, because if Bob goes out of business or Bob changes his mind, you know, that's not good for my business. And, you know, relying on that third party for your source of livelihood is pretty scary.
Yeah, exactly. I hope it stays. You know, as a successful business in the moment, you're always like hoping for not change, right?
Right. I hope it stays the same but gets better.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But we all know that that's never the case in business, and you just have to adapt. So, yeah, just I guess I think that the moral of the story is, like, you have to anticipate one of these marketplaces actually, you know, being successful in the near future. And you know, however, you have to align yourself to cope with that or even profit from it, then that's what you have to do.
Right. So, speaking of the future here, let's just throw this out now, because I think this is a good time to talk about it. Where do you kind of see WordPress going in the next 2 to 5 years here? I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of big changes as of late. And I'm thinking of things like the WooCommerce acquisition by Automattic. And then there's the vicious rumor that's going around that GoDaddy's developing its own marketplace for plugins out there that I heard at MicroConf. I mean, all of these things have some pretty big impacts on us as plugin developers, and the theme market has been slowly declining over the years. I mean, where do you kind of see the trends heading and the next hot spots out there?
Yeah, I don't know about hot spots. I mean, I feel like most people in the WordPress space right now are trying to minimize risk, right? Which means most likely, or for people like me and you who are on the open source model right now, we're selling WordPress plugins that are open source. Anyone can fork them and rebrand them and sell them on their own. I mean, that's pretty high risk, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, anyone in that similar situation is looking to do something like a SaaS, where it's much more difficult for a competitor to replicate what your intellectual property, essentially. Well, I guess it's not really intellectual property if it's open source, right?
Yeah, it's your service. If your plugin relies on some external service and that service is hard to replicate, you've got better lock-in, if you will.
Yeah, and the other thing with a SaaS versus a open source plugin, our model with the open source plugin is when they buy the plugin, they get the code, and if they don't need updates or they don't want updates or they don't care about updates, then they don't really need to renew in a year, right? So our renewal rates are pretty low compared to SaaS, where if they don't renew, the lights go out, you know?
Right, right.
And they can no longer use the service at all. So I think that's another risk that you mitigate by going like the SaaS route. So I see a lot of WordPress businesses going that route. We've already seen two, or at least two that I know of. Opt-in Monster has gone SaaS. They've launched recently. And Event Espresso has gone SaaS as well. Now, they both still have their WordPress components, but they also have a SaaS offering now. So I think I think we're just going to see more of that, right, in the next, you know, couple of years. I hope so, anyway. I think it's healthy for WordPress business to kind of mature like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one thing that I really like about the WordPress marketplace is that it seems to be kind of on this leveling out growth curve. You know, I know you've seen the statistics about the size of the market. It's powering, what, 23% of the web or 18% of the web and 50% of the sites that are using a content management system or something like that.
Right.
So it's obviously huge and it's continuing to get huge. The thing that it seems like to me where WordPress is going is they're going to have to make it easier for the less experienced developer.
Mm.
Because I don't know what kind of questions you're getting in your support, but it seems like I've seen kind of a pretty huge uptick in developers and site owners that are coming in with even less WordPress experience than they were 12, 18, 24 months ago.
Is that right? Okay. Huh.
Yeah, and maybe that's just a factor of my own plugin here where they're doing that, but that's what I've seen as a trend there. Do you see anything like that with migration?
We have seen a bit of an uptick in kind of inexperienced. The thing is, it's been not significant, though. I wouldn't call it a trend that we've witnessed. But I think the thing with our plugin is it's fairly advanced plugin, or it's a fairly advanced tool anyway. So I think people would just shy away from it just from the language we use on our site and stuff, right? If they're a newbie. But we do, you know, we do process, you know, refunds from time to time of people that buy and it's just not the fit, right? It's not, they should really be hiring someone or learning more first before using our product.
Right, where they get it and they're like, holy hell, I know I should be doing something about databases and migration here, but I have no idea how to do this, and they're just over their head.
Yeah, and then they request support and expect us to teach them where the WP config file is, for example. Those customers we refund because if they can't find their WP config file, we're going to have to, you know, hold their hand throughout the entire process, and it's just going to take forever and be very expensive to support. So it just doesn't make sense for us to do that, right?
Right, right. So speaking of challenges, what would you say is the hardest thing about running your company right now?
Well, giving up control has always been a personal struggle for me. I can't, especially now, I've given up quite a bit of control of the business. You know, I've got 5 full-time employees that do development. I don't touch the code anymore. And I've recently stopped reviewing what's going on in our GitHub issues. Like, I used to read everything and just kind of keep on top of it. And I stopped doing that recently. And so I only review issues that people mention me in. That they want my input on. And so that's been a little, because I find that's a little unnerving.
Anyway. Unnerving, yeah. it freaks you out.
It does. It freaks me out a little bit because I feel like I bring something to the product. And by taking myself out, I feel like it might make the product worse or the product might lose something. So that does, but you know what, that could be the case still, right? I could decide in 6 months that I need to roll myself back in or maybe hire someone to fill kind of a more user experience kind of design role that I see myself taking, right? But on an organizational level, I'd say the hardest thing in the past probably a year was hiring, because we've hired 5 people.
This is all in the last 12 months?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Wow, that's a pretty insane growth.
Yeah. We went from 1 full-time to 5 full-time. And that one guy that was with us a year ago left. It's been crazy. It's a crazy learning experience because we're hiring remote developers. So it's very different, I think, than hiring people in an office for an office environment. And most of the literature out there, at least the good literature, is for that scenario, you know, hiring for an office environment. And so I've found, and that's what I started with when I started, because that's, I did some hiring when I worked an office job in the past. And so I used that experience when I started out, and I found that most of the things that I was, most of the weight that I was attributing things to was wrong. for example, I might attribute weight to, you know, how well someone is spoken, and their body language. If their body language, you know, if they look like someone I'd like to hire, you know what I mean?
Right, right. You don't want to hire somebody who looks meek and like, if you sneeze on them, they're going to run out the door. You don't want somebody that's that lacking in confidence and positivity, yeah. You know, and if they're like the, you know, the Debbie Downer type and you're getting that vibe in the interview, you're thinking that's going to bring some bad energy. You don't want that either, but you can't really figure any of that stuff out when you're doing remote hiring.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, all of that stuff doesn't matter that much when remote hiring.
Well, yeah, it matters. It's a totally different thing because now you're sitting in chat rooms all day, right?
Exactly. They could, their personality when you know, in face-to-face situations could be completely different than their, you know, instant messaging personality, right? It often is for some, you know, a lot of people. So what I found is that what I decided to do is just stop doing face-to-face interviews over Skype or Hangouts and just do, you know, instant messaging only and email. Because that's the reality. We're mostly in message-based company, right? We don't do face-to-face very often. We do from time to time do face-to-face just ad hoc. So we'll, you know, if we want to work some problem out or something, we'll jump on Skype or jump on Hangouts because it might be a bit faster. Or maybe it's Friday and we don't want to type anymore, you know?
Everybody grab the favorite malted beverage of your choice and sit around and we'll bullshit for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, and the other thing is we're spread out. We're, you know, we've got one guy in California, we've got three in the UK, one guy in New Zealand. You know, it doesn't make sense a lot of the time to even get on a call because they're in bed, you know?
Right, right. Or they're getting ready to head out to the pub in the UK and you're just coming online in the US or even waking up in California.
Yeah.
Yeah, that exactly. Just doesn't work. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So what would you say, since you had to hire so many people, and I know that hiring developers is a real pain in the ass to get good people and get them to pass through all the things. I mean, what was your secret to finding these five great people here?
Oh, well, it's a secret. I can't tell you.
Of course not. All right. So give me some non-secret things that can help.
I'm just kidding. I'm happy to share all of my hiring insights. So probably the number one thing I realized is that you can't really... So let's say a really great developer applies, right? They won't necessarily have an up-to-date resume, right? They won't necessarily have a very active GitHub account, right? All these things they may not have, but they still are a great developer. So how do you actually know they're a great developer?
Right. How?
Well, we would put them on trial. So... They would if they're working a full-time job, they would come on for as many hours as they can afford during their week. So maybe it's 10 hours. Ideally, it's more, right? Ideally, it's 20 hours a week. And they just become part of the team. They get the keys to the castle. They can commit code and submit pull requests just like a full-fledged member of the team. And, you know, it's a sink or swim kind of thing.
Right. So this is a paid deal here?
Oh yeah. It's a paid
deal. All right. So you're attracting high quality people because you're throwing it out there saying, I'm going to pay you X an hour. We'll try this out. How long does your trial period last?
Well, it depends on how many hours a week they're putting in, right? We don't set a timeline because it depends. We don't have a fixed timeline for everyone because it depends on their scenario, right?
Depend more on output?
It can, and that's the other thing. If they come up to speed really quickly, like you know, some of the guys that are on the team now, I kind of knew after a few days, right, that they were right, because they were just pumping stuff out and they were learning really quickly, and it just, you know, you could see it coming, you know. And so there's certain things that you want to figure out in the long term, though. So we, you know, usually keep them going for a couple of weeks anyway to get kind of, you know, so someone may be doing really well, but then when you critique their work, maybe they get really defensive, right? Then that's not a fit for us. Like the way we work is we invite criticism. Like we review each other's code all the time and invite criticism and invite making it better for everyone, right? It's not your code, right? You just wrote it.
right. Yes, no ivory towers, no islands here. Everybody is trying to make for a better product.
Exactly. So, you know, and that's happened. And we've had, you know, someone on trial that was defensive about their solutions and their ideas and everything. And that's just not a fit. That's not going to work, right? In our environment anyway. So, yeah, that's pretty much it, right? The trial by fire is kind of the secret, if you want.
Yeah. I've had success with something similar. Do you do a lot of stuff beforehand to get to the trial? Like, how do you qualify somebody as a good developer? Like, where are you going to hire them? And what questions do you ask them up front?
I ask them for the best sample of their code, because I'm not going around hunting for their code on the web. Like, screw that. Like, if they can't give me a good chunk of code that is representative of their best work, then they're probably not a fit anyway, right? So that's what I do. I usually just do that. And if the code looks good, then I'll just throw them into the trial, most likely. It should be noted that I've never hired anyone besides a developer yet. So I don't know. I don't know what the vetting process is for other, you know, roles.
I think it's something similar. I think, you know, if you were going to hire a virtual assistant, you would basically do a trial with that, you know, document something that you want it done, throw them into it, see how they do. If they struggle with it, then toss them and find somebody else, I guess.
Yeah. What about like a second in command or like, you know, how would you hire someone like that?
that's very tricky. And I don't know what the answer is to that. I think you'd have to try to decide if somebody is very trustable. For something like that, like a second in command, I kind of want to do that from within, because you want somebody who really understands the inside aspects of the business, right?
Yeah.
And kind of gets the culture and gets the process and just gets the way that you would want to run things.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was that would be my answer to someone from inside.
Yeah, but finding somebody, you know, in your pool of five who A, wants to do that, and B, is willing to do that, you know, it might be a challenge. So,
for sure,
that's a problem I would love to have someday. I'm definitely not big enough for that.
Right.
Yeah. So, if someone's getting started on a plugin or theme business like right now, what's the one piece of advice that you'd offer them today, based on your experience so far, that you wish you had kind of known when you got started?
Right. So, okay, well, let's break it down. Themes, I would just say, don't do it.
Okay.
I mean, it's such a saturated market, right? The theme market. And it's a race to the bottom. You know, if you look on Theme Forest, I mean, they're selling for $10, you know?
You have to sell a whole lot of themes to be making bank on $10 a theme.
And it just doesn't make sense, because you have to support that theme when you sell it. So you're going to support a person that just gave you $10, support them for a year? Like, that just makes no sense to me.
Right, right.
So I wouldn't do that unless you had some kind of angle, like some kind of unique off, like something very unique. I know... Ryan Sullivan's doing something with WP. He's the guy behind WPSiteCare.com. Mm-hmm. And I think they're selling a theme now, and it's expensive. That's what's different. It's that it's actually, you know, a couple hundred bucks or something, you know? And I thought that was amazing. Like, they're actually charging money for a theme. That might be something that might actually make sense, you know?
Well, what do you get for your couple hundred bucks on that?
I'm not sure.
Is it like a productized service kind of thing? Here's the theme, and it comes with this level of support for, you know, a year or whatever?
I'm not sure. You'll have to check it out. I just remember hearing about that. I'm not even sure exactly how much it is. I just remember hearing that it was a lot more than $10.
Right.
But for a plugin, if you're just getting started with a plugin, I would say, well, it depends on your timeline. If you have some time, I would say pick a bunch of ideas and plant those seeds on WordPress.org as free plugins. So, and see if they grow, right? See if they gain momentum by being a free plugin on WordPress.org. And then if one does gain momentum, you can, you know, survey the people that use it and ask them if they'd be willing to pay for XYZ features, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, that's the process I used with WP Migrate DB. And it's the process that we're using with this new product that we're launching this month. So,
tell us about the new product here.
Okay. So it's called WP Offload S3. And it's actually just been renamed. It used to be called Amazon S3 and CloudFront on WordPress.org. And we renamed it to WP Offload S3 because of trademarks, right? Do you really want to be selling a product that using Amazon's trademarks? Probably not. Right?
Probably not. Yeah, that's a little dicey.
You don't want to be, you know, halfway through the year and have great momentum and then have to rebrand your product. That would totally suck, right? So we figured we'd do it now before launch. I think it's, and the other thing is that in the WordPress space, one of the only things that you have of value is your trademark, right? One of your only assets. For example, for WP Migrate DB, we have a trademark in the US for that name. So no one else can sell a product that migrates databases called that, right? So they can't piggyback on our branding. So this will, if this plugin takes off, I'll be applying for a registered trademark as well for this product. From my understanding, you don't have to register the trademark right away. As soon as you start doing business with a trade name, I believe it's like implicitly trademarked. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer.
I'm not a lawyer either. And man, trademarking trade names, all of that crap just gives me a headache. So,
yeah, I don't like trademarking something that I don't know is worth trademarking it. It just seems kind of pointless, right?
Right.
So I guess what it does is it offloads your media library, your WordPress media library, to Amazon S3. And then you could configure CloudFront with it, which is a CDN. And so speed up your media library. So serving images that show up on your site would go through a CDN and be much faster. So, you know, we have the free plugins bin on .org for a couple of years now. I actually put it on there when I was building the first Delicious Brains site.
Really?
Yeah. Because we needed to put our images on S3, or I wanted to put our images on S3 and speed up the site that way. And I found a plugin to do that on WordPress.org, but it was really old and needed some tweaking. So I tweaked it and got it working and just put up the patched version on .org, right? It was pretty much identical, you know, except a few lines of code that were changed. But just those fixes, just those little fixes, people really appreciated, and they switched from the other plugin to mine and started using mine. So I kind of piggybacked on the momentum of the other plugin that had been abandoned, right? If I hadn't known, though, in retrospect, I should have adopted that other plugin that was abandoned, because you can do that. So you can just email plugins at WordPress.org and you can adopt a plugin that hasn't been updated in 2 years. They'll help you connect with the author of the plugin, and then you can ask them if you can adopt it. And if they can't reach the author, they'll just give it to you most times. Did you know about that, Dave?
I did know about the adoption program. I didn't know exactly all the details on how it worked, because I've tried to do the adoption, but I didn't email the guys at plugins@wordpress.org. Mm-hmm. I just basically tried to contact authors directly, and I got nothing.
Right.
So I was like trying to find a real estate plugin, and I eventually ended up adopting Great Real Estate. I finally got a hold of the guy. I found out his name. I had to contact him through Twitter. He wasn't responding to anything off of his profile on WordPress.org. I guess the email must have been really old.
Right.
But I finally got a hold of him through Twitter and found out, hey, you're available. Would you be willing to turn this over to me? So he asked me a few questions about what I wanted to do with it and so on. And he's like, okay, yeah, sure. I'm out of this industry now, so go for it. It's all yours. So yeah, it worked out pretty well, but that's good. So yeah. let's talk about this a little bit more here for a second. You know, I get asked a fair amount about how do you find ideas for WordPress plugins. And of course, adoption of existing plugins is one great way to go about that. What would you say to other people that are out there trying to get started on their own WordPress plugin? How would they do that?
What I would do is I would look at the popular plugins that are the ones that are popular on WordPress.org, and just look through the support forums for problems, install them and try them out yourself to see how well designed they are, and try to identify one that it's not, that market is not being served well, right? And then just build a better one in that category. That's not going to necessarily get you success immediately. It's not like you build this plugin, you throw it up on .org, and then bam, there's like, hundreds of downloads a day it's going to take time, right? It's like, when you put something new on .org, it's going to take a while for it to be discovered. So unless you have like an email list that you can drive traffic to that page about this new product that you have, it's gonna take some hustle to get eyeballs on that thing. I think I think a great example of a plugin that did this is EnviroGallery. So Thomas Griffin, who had a slider plugin called Soliloquy, he was looking for his next opportunity, and he identified that galleries were underserved market. What was the name of that? Next Gen Gallery was like the dominant one. And it really wasn't well designed, and it was kind of, it could have used a lot of work. And so he built a plugin that was better, right? He built a better gallery plugin. I think Next Gen has gotten a lot better since then, but I think, a lot of people have switched to Enviro as well. It's, kind of too late for a lot of people. So, yeah, I think that's one way you can go about it. I do think that strategy is being used by a lot of people at the moment too. And the bar is being raised, and a lot of the popular plugins on .org are, good. They're good plugins, and there's not a lot of space there to get in. So, it is getting harder for sure.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of pressure in the popular niches. I mean, I don't think we're going to see another SEO plugin for a while that's going to beat guys like, All-in-One SEO or Yoast or something like that. And the analytics space is pretty saturated. And the e-commerce ones, I mean, Pippin might be the last guy that gets to carve out a really good, nicely defined e-commerce plugin at this point, because he did it specifically for digital downloads. And
then forms is another category that's I've seen a few new players pop up recently, and I know the guys at Ninja Forms. I know what they've been doing. They've been blogging about it, and they're doing some amazing work. So it's going to be, I would not want to compete with those guys. And then of course there's the first to market guys, Rocket Genius, Gravity Forms.
Right.
And they're still a solid product, right? So, I mean, it's tough. That would be a tough category too, man. I would not want to go into forms. So
yeah, you got to find something that's got chinks in the armor, and I don't think any of those categories have it at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. So it's gotten a lot harder, definitely, in the last couple of years. I think I blame Rob Walling.
I do too. You know, he's come up with this whole idea of the stair step method, and one of the ways that he promotes actively at this point is saying WordPress plugins. So now everybody's like banging on the doors looking for WordPress plugins.
Exactly.
And for those of us trying to expand our own markets, we're like, damn it, all the ideas are taken now. What the hell?
Exactly.
It's tough. It's getting a lot tougher. There's no question about it.
The one thing I will say about ideas is once you do get a business going, I find they come a lot easier. I know for us, at least, we get ideas just from feedback from our customers, right? And the needs that they have and the stuff that they come to us with. So we're actually in the process of developing a SaaS product, and it's all based on feedback from customers.
Can you talk about that product?
Yeah, the problem is merging databases. So let's say you have a live site that's out there and you're a developer, and you copy that live site down to your local dev environment and you start working on it. And so you're changing the database, right? You're adding posts or pages or whatever, you know, lots of data. And then on the live site, the database is also changing, and you have people logging in there and changing pages and editing and adding pages and whatever. Well, those two databases are now out of sync, right? And say you've got your local database all set, ready to go live. Well, you can't just replace the live database that has new data in it, right? So you have this huge conundrum, and you have to merge the data somehow. Well, we're going to build a system that will simplify this process greatly. So, that's it in a nutshell.
Nice, nice. And when do you think that's coming out?
Nice try.
Damn.
Not a chance. I think it's going to be, you know, I just read the Lean Startup for the first time, believe it or not. And it's just kind of reaffirmed some stuff for me, like stuff that that I know that but has kind of been pushed to the back of my mind, like prototyping and getting early feedback and all these things. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to build this product without assumptions, right? So we're not going to assume that we know the best way to solve this problem, you know, and build a polished solution, right? So we're going to The idea is to build a prototype and get some early testers, some early adopters to give it a go. And maybe you will be one of those early adopters.
Entirely possible. Entirely possible. This is definitely a problem that I have had.
Yeah. I'm not an early adopter. I'm like the worst early adopter. I don't like – the only thing I ever early adopted, I think, was the iPhone. Like the first iPhone, I was in line for that. So it's like, this is just too good. I can't not early adopt this. But everything else, I'm like, I'll wait.
Yeah, you know, I find that as I'm getting older, I become less interested in being an early adopter at stuff. Like, I now just kind of want shit to work.
Yeah.
And I want it to work well together. You know, like when Pippin came out with software licensing and EDD, I was like, that sounds interesting. Let me know when that's a little more honed and ready, you know, and it took a few revisions to kind of get out there. And I was like, okay, finally, the pain is bad enough. I'm ready to go through it. And even then, you know, there were still some specific things because I was selling bundles and he didn't really have detailed bundle support built into there, and eventually got better and it's working exactly the way I want now. But, you know, just the struggle of going through being that guy that sort of is on the bleeding edge gets old after a while if you're running a production site, you know?
Oh man, I know. I wish I could pay money for the software that I have right now to be more stable. It's you know, updating WordPress plugins and then test that you have to test them to make sure your site didn't break, and that whole process, you know, the more plugins you have, the more often you have to do that. I mean, we don't even have that many plugins. I can't imagine. There must be some, you know, people out there just they must be constantly updating plugins and testing their site, you know?
I don't know that they're testing, but they are certainly constantly updating. And when then stuff goes sideways, they they're posting on forums saying, this broke or whatever. So yeah, it's an ongoing problem. There you go. That's a business idea right there. Somebody needs to offer stability as a service.
Yeah. Yeah, I have actually pitched that to somebody recently, actually.
Nice. Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah. So no one else take that idea. That's
if anybody can solve that problem at all, shut up and take my money. I would pay for that service right there.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I hope Kyle's listening.
I hope so too. All right. Well, with that, let's wrap things up. Can you tell me, Brad, where people can learn more about you, get your stuff, subscribe to your podcast, all that good stuff?
Yeah, so I'm at Brad T on Twitter and bradt.ca, deliciousbrains.com, applyfilters.com. Yeah, that's about it, I guess.
Awesome. And don't forget to mention Big Snow Tiny Conf.
Oh, God, yes. If you're a snowboarder or a skier, we have this annual conference that we've been running for the last couple of years.
And entrepreneur,
yeah.
Yeah, we don't want Sean White showing up going, dude, all right, let's go shred.
That would be awesome. I'm sure he has some business insights.
I'll bet he actually does. That was a bad example. I'll bet he probably has some business marketing stuff that he's going on. That's where he spends all his fat cash.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, so on January 25th to the 28th, we're going to be in Sugarbush Mountain, Vermont again this year. And so that's 2016. And so, yeah, just check out bigsnowtinyconf.com. And the dates and everything aren't updated yet on that site. But anyway, just check it out and you'll kind of figure out what's it all about.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot for being. Go ahead.
Should we mention about West?
Oh, sure. I guess I should actually mention that since I think I'm about to become the de facto lead on it now. So we are actually planning the first ever Big Snow Tiny Conf West, and I'll be mentioning more of that on the podcast here because I'm sure it's probably going to start getting into my regular updates as I'm now going to be taking that over from the guy that originally had the idea of having it out here. But we're probably going to be in Beaver Creek in early February. We haven't hammered out the exact dates yet, but we will have all the updates on the same site that Brad just mentioned, bigsnowtinyconf.com.
Awesome.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for being on the show today, Brad.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
And for anybody else, we would love to hear from you. If you have any questions for Brad or us, you can hit us up at podcasts@roguestartups.com. And we'd love to have a review from you on iTunes as well. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.